Welcome, everyone, to episode 320 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to continue with our preemptive By Felicia series. We are going to address the top offseason questions for the Memphis Grizzlies, Dallas Mavericks, New Orleans Pelicans, Houston Rockets, and San Antonio Spurs. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is the man who I could no longer in good conscience call my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. Is that because I'm no longer a genius?
It's because our very stable genius of a dear leader went out and suggested ingesting bleach yesterday as a cure for the coronavirus. And you know, when 50,000 Americans are dead, it's not as funny as it used to be.
Oh, boy. See, I've been busy this week, so I have not been reading up on the president's shenanigans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you told me that right there, under normal circumstances, my initial thought should be, oh, you're yanking my chain. But
I wish.
Knowing who he is, I totally believe you, and that is sad as hell.
He is now claiming he said it sarcastically, but right. he did not.
Well, let's just hope that whoever took his advice are Trumpers, at least.
I'm pretty sure they are. Yeah. I would gonna go out on a limb and say no one else is stupid enough to try it. But yeah, I saw like Maryland posted something today. It was like, please don't do this. We had more than 100 calls about it. Don't ingest bleach. It's a very bad idea. So if anyone listening out there was considering trying it, don't.
We should have your wife, Alex, on just for one episode where we lead up to all of this. We end up just asking her one question, like, should people do this? And she just says no and leaves.
Yeah. It would be very quick. Yes.
That is, well, I mean, I guess natural selection is in play now.
It sure seems that way. But yeah, unfortunately, maybe you'll go back to it at some point, but at least for the next couple episodes, I got to abandon it.
That's fair. You know what? It could be fun if the president himself did it on national television. Just
that's
to prove
true. Yeah, I mean,
way safe.
Exactly. Just show us it works, and then we'll all try it, I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, hell, why not?
Yeah. What do you have to lose?
Right. Well, I've had a better week than you, it seems, then.
Yes. Congrats on the start of your Last Dance pod series.
Thank you. Yes. I've been... So for Americans listening in on this, like, yeah, you can skip ahead 30 seconds. I basically... pitched an idea to the Danish radio, Radio 4, about creating an accompanying podcast for The Last Dance, and they bought the pitch, and they brought me in. We've recorded one episode. People like it because we were releasing the podcast first, and then it's going to be on actual radio from 4 to 5 p.m. on Saturdays. So it's a 5-episode series where we pick up the threats of the previous nights or the previous weeks, sorry, 2 episodes from The Last Dance. And it's a hoot. It's so fun, so much fun to produce. We've gotten all kinds of special allowances, you could almost say. We're allowed to use a whole lot of background noises and sounds that, you know, you and I are not, for example, mm-hmm. on this show. And having the ability to just toy around with that and knowing that you can do so legally and not get a cease and desist letter from the NBA or Netflix is very freeing and very, very fun.
Yeah. So I would be lying if I said I listened because it's in Danish and I would have no idea what's going on. But to all of our Danish listeners out there,
and
please
Sarah.
Check it out. And Sarah, that's right. Please check it out. Support Mort's work there because I'm sure it. If I understood what was going on, I'm sure I would enjoy it. But I'm sure it's great stuff.
I mean, honestly, right? You should be a little bit ashamed. We've been doing this podcast for 4 years now. 4 years. I speak your language. And I mean, you know.
Yeah. Add that to the quarantine list of tasks to do.
You've had plenty of time now. Yeah.
All right, let's get into this. We're going to go through every team in the Southeast Division. And Southwest Division. The Southeast, thank God we are done with them. We'll start with the Memphis Grizzlies. Honestly, there's not a whole lot to talk about with them, I feel like, because they're pretty well set up. John Morant's still under contract for a few more years. Jaren Jackson Jr. is under contract. Brandon Clark, like, they have most of their guys. They'll have decisions to make in the years to come, but like this summer, it should be pretty chill. They're over the cap right now, so they don't need to. They're not going to be a big free agent destination because they made that trade with Miami at the trade deadline where they took on Winslow and then, you know, do the swap, Gorgie Jang, James Johnson swap with Minnesota as well. So like they spent their cap space effectively already. The one guy who's, I mean, their best free agent, their best incumbent free agent is DeAnthony Melton, who is a restricted free agent. How do you think he's going to have a big market this summer?
Well, I think it could be an underrated market because he is young, he defends, and he can shoot the three. He's not an elite three-point shooter, I should mention, but given that the league the players of the league always seem to get better shooting-wise as they age, it's not really a concern for me that he's not going to turn into a pretty good shooter. I mean, he's only 21. He'll turn 22 here in May, but that's like he's a pup, right? I mean, mm-hmm. There's so much more time, and given his defensive upside, I have to assume that some team is definitely going to try to wrestle him away from Memphis. That wouldn't surprise me. The question is, you know, to what lengths should Memphis go to keep him?
Mm-hmm. So what would you say if you're running Memphis right now, how much would you be willing to spend to retain him this summer?
Well, again, that depends on where the cap lands. Yeah. I feel like, but looking over the roster as it is, when you have a guy like Justice Winslow earning $13 million, you have a guy like Tyus Jones earning $8 million. I feel it's somewhere in between those numbers.
Yeah. That sounds right to me.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I don't, because he's restricted and because so few teams have cap space this summer, I'm not entirely convinced that he's going to have a huge market. I mean, he's good and he should, but restricted free agents in general typically don't get big offer sheets, at least until after that first wave of free agency. Now, the fact that this free agent class really sucks might change that. Like there aren't many teams with cap space and there aren't many guys who are worth spending money on. So maybe teams do prioritize restricted free agents in this market and just use their full, you know, non-taxpayer mid-levels right away on guys like DeAnthony Melton, in which case, I mean, again, depending on where the cap comes in, if it was 115, the non-taxpayer mid-level was supposed to be around 9.8, so that, there you go, that's, you know, between Tyus at 8.8 and Justice at 13.
Right.
I would be surprised if Melton gets more than $10 million a year. I don't think the money's out there. I don't think he's shown enough to necessarily deserve that yet. So I wouldn't be shocked if he and a lot of these guys this summer, like, I think it behooves pretty much everyone to just take shorter term deals. Like, I don't know that DeAnthony Melton wants to lock in a four-year deal this summer. I think a two-year deal, maybe like 2 years, 16 to 18 million, and then
that sounds about right.
And then hope 2 years from now the world is a little more stable, but you know, the cap environment is much more stable and much more predictable than it's going to be this next season and possibly even into 2021-22. So if I were advising Melton, I mean, sure, if he gets, you know, a four-year offer worth more than $10 million a year, of course, take it. But I would guess that's probably what he's, you know, best case scenario, he's looking at, you know, 2 years, 16, 18 million, somewhere around there.
I would look at Detroit. Or I would be a little bit scared of Detroit, I should say.
Yeah.
Like, we always mention Atlanta, and that's also true, but I just want to mix it up and bring in Detroit.
Sure.
Because it's unfair to just bring up Atlanta all the time.
Right.
But they have money to spend, and, you know, they have a young roster. They're going to build it up, and he is so young that obviously he would count as a part of a young core. And I think there is tremendous value in having someone this young come in with 2 years of NBA experience, because then he's accustomed to the league already. There won't be this huge adjustment period. The downside, of course, it would be his third team in 3 years, which probably isn't the start that you want on your NBA career. But if the money is right and the situation is right, that's probably what you have to follow.
Yeah, definitely. I think the other question for Memphis is Josh Jackson, who came in, didn't play much at the start of the year, but he played 18 games and actually looked, I don't want to say he's living up to the promise that he had coming into the league, but, you know, Phoenix paid to get rid of him last summer. Right. He at least looked like a legitimate rotation player. How much, if at all, do you think Memphis should be willing to spend on him this summer?
Not much, because it's still just an 18-game sample size. I agree with you on every count. He did look better than he did in Phoenix, and hopefully there is something there for him to return to the NBA career that he was supposed to have, being picked fourth overall. Personally, I doubt he's ever going to live up to that draft slot, but if he can just turn himself into a steady rotational player, that's a huge win for him moving forward. I just question whether that production over an 18-game sample size is enough. I don't know if it is. And even so, the shooting percentages weren't great. I think what we saw from him was more so him playing under control. And don't get me wrong, that is absolutely important. He made smarter decisions with the ball. He was a little bit less wild and crazy. But how much stock do you put into that over 18 games? I think for Memphis, it has to come down to communication with him and his agent, right? It has to be a question of, you know, where's his head at? Because as we know, it was immaturity issues that really were making his situation problematic. So I think it boils down to them feeling in their gut, is this guy reliable? And then they are actually going to just basically throw the on-court production out the window, because they just need to know that he's in the right headspace.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think for both sides, a one-year deal is probably the way to go here. I don't think you want to make a long-term commitment to him in case, you know, his career takes a turn for the worse. And for Jackson, you take the one-year deal, and if you can keep your head on straight and prove you fit in well, start to rehab your image, maybe in 2021 you actually start to get some better offers. But I can't imagine there's going to be a huge market for him this summer either. I mean,
no.
Sure, maybe a team, I mean, teams like Detroit, Charlotte, New York, they'll have cap space, but I don't know that that's the type of player you want to bring in, where, you know, you're just so far away from being competitive, and he's going to still have the, you know, former number four overall pick, so he's going to have the hype of oh, okay, this guy could be the franchise savior for a bad team like that, which I don't think is the case. I mean, he played well as a role player in Memphis, but I don't think you want him walking in feeling like he's going to be one of your franchise cornerstones.
Right. And there is also the matter, even though I did say just before that you should basically throw the on-court thing out the window, he doesn't project ever to be a good shooter, right? I mean, at least not a knockdown shooter. At best, he's going to be one of those pedestrian three-point shooters who may eventually crack into the 70% from the free throw line. But that's not a great starting point, though. So you have to kind of figure out, what is he outside of a scorer? Because apparently he's just not great at scoring. What is he? At Kansas, he was more, he was, you know, a play initiator. There are Sean Marion comparisons in terms of, you know, he can defend at multiple positions and he can sort of be a jack of all trades type of player. Well, you know, we haven't seen that in the NBA, and that's over 4,300 minutes. And I think now for him, it's about, you know, that time to flip that switch and go, you know what, I'm not going to be Mr. 20 point a game. I'm not going to be that guy. I have to pivot and figure out something else.
Yeah. So the only other question I have for Memphis is, depending on how much they spend to retain Melton and or Jackson. I mean, right now, I'm looking at early bird rights to get these numbers, and we will be throughout the pod, but right now with a $115 million cap, they are $27.4 million under the tax. I don't think they're going to want to exceed the threshold quite yet. I mean, yeah, they were in the playoff. You know, right now they're the 8th seed in the playoffs. Next year they should presumably be as good, if not better. But, like, they're still just so young that I don't think there's any need for them to go into the tax. So I think they'll try to stay under, but they will have presumably the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So more, whether it's a player or just like an archetype, who should they be going after this summer? Like, what is their biggest need?
I think I'm going to answer it with the archetype question instead, because I don't have a specific player in mind. I think that they need, a flexible wing who can slide up to the big position. So like a 3-4 man. Mm-hmm. And theoretically, that is actually the position that we were talking about in terms of Josh Jackson being that type of guy. But someone a little bit better. Kyle Anderson was supposed to be that guy. I think he does have some value, but I don't think he is necessarily a great NBA player, if you catch my drift. Like, he's steady. He doesn't really make a whole lot of mistakes, and that's fine. But he also doesn't give you the exceptional at any point. He's also not a strong shooter, and you know, slow-mo is still limited defensively when teams push the pace. Mm-hmm. So I think they need someone who can just sort of come in and play the 3 and the 4 and slide in between perimeter and big position. Who that player is, though, not really sure. Maybe it actually answers itself by just having Justice Winslow on the roster, because he's kind of big enough to play those positions while also being able to handle the basketball. So I kind of want to see what he brings to the table. If he lives up to that hype and he stays healthy, then that need for that archetype is going to diminish.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, if you're the Grizzlies, you should feel very good about where you are right now. You're ahead of schedule. Like, no one expected you to be in the playoff race this year. You were projected to be one of the worst teams in the NBA. I mean, you are well ahead of pace. You just got Winslow. We don't know what he's going to do. Dylan Brooks just had a breakout season. Ja Morant is, you know, almost certainly going to win Rookie of the Year. Jaren Jackson Jr. took a step forward. Brandon Clark looks like a stud. Like, you are in a very good position moving forward. I just don't think you have to do anything crazy or reckless this summer. I think it's still, you're still in the feeling out process of the rebuild, but there's no like win now urgency yet. I think the worst thing you could do is trying to expedite it because, oh, we had some unexpected success this year. We are in that win now window. No, like,
right.
You know, John Morant and Jaren Jackson are barely 20 years old. Like, you've still got so much time left here. Continue to build at the pace you are. You know, continue to find guys who are on their developmental timelines, like Winslow, like Brooks. You're in good shape. I would feel very good if I'm a Grizzlies fan right now.
I will say this, though. If they had cap space, and significant cap space, I wouldn't have hated to see them actually gamble on a restricted free agent and go after Malik Beasley.
Oh, yeah.
I think he could be incorporated really well. And in particular, because Dylan Brooks, you know, he's 6'7", 220. I know he's played the off guard this year, but he's big enough to also play the 3. So you can definitely mix and match with those two. And that's pretty significant shooting to put around Ja and Jaren. So I think that could have been interesting. But given their financial circumstances, yeah, just play it safe. Keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, after the conclusion of next year, Gorgui Dieng will be off the books. Mm-hmm. And that's $17.2 million coming off those books.
Yeah.
So you will have some flexibility moving forward. I think the only thing you really need to be aware of is you need to be a free agency player before Ja Morant's rookie extension kicks in.
Yep.
You know, assuming that's what they're heading. I mean, I have to assume that he's going to get extended as soon as possible in the midst of, or after year 3.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's go to the Dallas Mavericks, Mort, who are in somewhat of a similar boat in that they have two young studs in Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis, although they have a few more decisions to make this summer. Let's start with Tim Hardaway Jr. He has basically a $19 million player option for the 2020-2021 season. Do you think he picks that up, or do you think he opts out and becomes an unrestricted free agent this summer?
Apologies. I think he picks it up. Right now, in the crazy world that we live in, I think turning down $19 million if you are a complimentary player is not necessarily smart.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, like, he's good. Don't get me wrong, he's had a very, very good year, but I also think teams are wise to the fact that you are going to get more open shots when you play with a Luka Doncic. That's not to diminish what Tim Hardaway has done by right. any means. I've been very impressed. You know, when he was with the Knicks and even with the Hawks, he was a gunner, and he would routinely play outside of the offense, and this year he hasn't. He has accepted that he's a complimentary bit player. He's accepted the fact that he's not Luka and just is able to play off of him so well, and that is definitely worth something. But, you know, the efficiency, I mean, you know, he hit 185 three-pointers in 63 games this year on 41% shooting from downtown. That is, like, he's very, very efficient. And when you look at the rest of his career, he's never really been around, you know, that kind of volume and that kind of efficiency before.
Yep.
So you really have to gauge the situation if you're a team outside going, you know, what type of player are we going to get in here? Do we have a Luka Doncic on the roster? Oh, no, our primary guard is Derek White. So, no, that wouldn't function, you know? So I think if you were Dallas, you're probably going to give him, you know, an offer that's less than what he got this year, mm-hmm. but a more of a long-term option. I don't think you should get rid of him by any means, but I don't necessarily think you should, you know, re-sign him with the mindset of keeping him long-term. As long as you re-sign him to a tradable contract and he keeps flourishing under Luka, then you can flip him later on, especially in 2021, where I have to assume they're going for a big one.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, he shot 40.7% this year from three. His next best shooting percentage from three was his rookie season. He was at 36.3% on 4.4 attempts per game.
Right.
So, and that, I mean, that was his previous career high from three. Over his first six seasons, he shot 34.3% from three. So, this screams outlier, whether it's sustainable or sustainable just because he's playing with Luka, who's one of the best passers in the league already. I don't know, but I'm with you in thinking that he opts in just because it behooves him to add another season like this to his resume, where he is a high volume knockdown shooter. I mean, he's only, you know, this was his age 27 season. He just turned 28 in the middle of March. Like, he's still got, in theory, he's still in the midst of his prime right now. So, you know, if he'd signed like a 1+1 deal this summer and then opts out in 2021, he'll have a chance to cash in then when a lot more teams will have cap space. I think if you decline this option, if you're Tim Hardaway, and this is going to be the same deal for every player with a player option, one of whom we'll discuss later, you're looking at a market where Atlanta, you know, will have cap space, but I don't think Tim Hardaway Jr. is going back to Atlanta. Miami will have cap space, but they're going to try to save it for 2021. So if anything, they'll maybe do a one-year balloon deal, and it sounds like they might even do that for Goran Dragic. So they might be out before the market even starts. So then you're looking at basically crappy teams. Other than that, it's the Charlottes, Detroits, Phoenix possibly, New York. Like, your choice is to take more money, or take a chance that you get more money. There's no guarantee right. that you're going to get a $19 million a year offer on the open market at all if you're Tim Hardaway Jr. Or just opt in and then give yourself one more year. And, you know, 2021, a lot more teams are projected to have cap space. And, you know, who knows if all of these guys opt out. You know, the Giannis, LeBron, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. If some of those guys don't opt out, then so many teams will have been saving cap space for guys who aren't on the market, and then the trickle-down effect comes to these second- and third-tier players who are free agents. So if I'm Tim Hardaway, I'm definitely opting in. But even if he doesn't, and if he becomes a free agent this summer, I think it's in his best interest to just do a 1+1 with Dallas. Call it, like, don't know, hell, if Dallas is willing to just say, we'll, you know, basically pay you the same amount and then just tack on a player option at the end, yep. or a team option, I guess, if they want
to. Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, if they want to give themselves flexibility, that's fine.
Yeah, I would go down that route, definitely. And I think also for Tim Hardaway himself, I have to assume that he's taken note of the fact that he's on a good team.
Yeah.
And that he's on a team with a special player for a change. Like, who did he have in New York who was special? Who did he have in Atlanta back then who was special? Like, not really anyone, right? This is a generational talent that he's playing with in Luka. And I think for him to have that success alongside him as a direct beneficiary of it, I think this definitely shifted some priorities for him. I wouldn't mm-hmm. be shocked. I mean, his whole attitude changed. It, like, he came in, he was kind of murky, like, after his second New York stint. He wasn't really, like, the most optimistic person.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hit Dallas, and, like, during games, you see him smile all the time. You see him when he's interviewed, like, he's positive. He's glowing almost, and it's just such a stark contrast to previous teams that he played for.
Yeah.
So I have to assume that factors in, right?
And like Luka trusted him with late game big shots. It's not like he got he had carte blanche for the first three quarters and then they froze him out in the fourth. Like,
right.
Luka would pass to him for potential game winners and would live with the results either way. He didn't like chew him out if he bricked a game winner would be game winner. So I think that probably should factor in, at least. I don't know if it will, but yeah, I think being on a good team and having a chance to continue building around these guys and playing with, you know, I'm sure it's just fun to play with Luka Doncic. It's like,
I assume so. The kid is smiling all the time. So yeah.
Yeah. So like that, I would assume will factor in. And then also, you know, with, as you said, with all this financial uncertainty, walking in $19 million is not a bad worst-case scenario.
Right.
Especially, you know, if players are giving back 25% of their remaining salary this year, and who knows if they have to give back a higher percentage than usual next year. Like, it may just be smart to, you know, keep that guaranteed money set as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other question for Dallas, at least... I know you have one more, but my other question for Dallas is, you know, Dwight Powell suffered the Achilles injury, I believe, in January, which feels like it was about 15 years ago at this point. So assuming the 2020-2021 season starts on time, I think it's safe to say Dwight Powell will be missing at least some of next season, if not a good portion of it.
Right.
So how should Dallas address that center spot in his absence?
Well, they have Willie Cauley-Stein. Mm-hmm. Well, he's got a player option, so it depends on what he does with that.
Right.
I have to assume, because it's only $2.3 million that he opts out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to cost a hell of a lot more to retain him, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So if you're willing to give him a one-year balloon deal of like $5.5 million to make sure that you have him, that I would be fine with that. Plus, I mean, even if you just stick with that, I wouldn't hate playing Maxi Kleber a lot more at center. Just basically, I would find every opportunity out there to put Maxi Kleber into the game more often.
Mm-hmm.
Because that dude, he is smart. He is so smart. He basically has no weakness. Like, fair enough, he's not a guard who can break people down off the dribble. But he is just so fundamentally sound at everything he does, while being entirely unselfish, at times too unselfish. And I have to at least consider the possibility of how much better Dallas could be by extending his minutes and playing him maybe 30 minutes a game, even at center or power forward, and just giving him that increased role. You know, you can argue, of course, that Kristaps is going to be the center long term, and then you have power forward next to him. But you know, honestly, I don't really care as much when it comes to Kristaps, whether he plays the four or the five. I think he's just one of those guys who just sort of plays basketball. You catch my drift? Like, I don't think it's a lock, whatever. The interesting thing for me is I would probably look to actually move Powell, even when I understand you can't get anything from him right now because of his injury.
Mm-hmm.
But when he does get back and like he's eased back into it, I would probably do my best to move him before the 21 offseason. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for DeLon Wright, even though I think DeLon Wright is really, really good. Because I think I have a pitch if I'm Dallas with Giannis. I think there's something there. You go to Giannis and you play up the Euro angle, right?
Yeah.
Look, and let me just preface this by saying I hope that Giannis sticks in Milwaukee.
Right.
Because I think he should be one of those Duncan type players who just or Kobe players who just never leaves his squad.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is an intriguing option nonetheless. And you go up with the Euro angle. You go, hey, look, Porzingis, Luka, and you as the main core. Let's go get it. Let's go Euro on the whole league's ass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the very least, you're gonna take a meeting there, right? Or at least hear them out.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, Mark Cuban is, you know, aside from the sexual harassment that was festering behind the scenes in the Mavericks organization that he said he was not aware of. So
right.
That is a black mark on the resume. But aside from that, I mean, he's been known as one of the more player friendly owners. Lord knows he's willing to invest in the team. I don't think the luxury tax will be of concern to him at any time soon. I mean, you know, Dirk will rave about him, like Dirk and Giannis. Dirk will definitely call Giannis and be like, look, you know, I played for the guy for 20 years. Like, he's, you know.
He's legit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I love doing it. Yeah, and I think the Mavs could pretty easily create enough cap space. They might already have it already, actually.
Yeah, they're at 84. I just, you know, you want to make sure on some level because you don't know where cap is going to end up, obviously. Yeah. And right. You also want some flexibility.
Yeah.
And plus, I think if you get Giannis, you're basically locking your 4 or 5. Then Giannis is your 4, Porzingis is your 5, and then you don't really need to pay Dwight Powell $11 million a year.
Sure.
Like, and again, I like Dwight Powell. I think the way that he just, you know, sets screens and rolls to the basket, and even when he pops, like he's such an agile and flexible big man. I think there's a lot to like with mm-hmm. Dwight Powell. But when I see what the going rate is for centers out there, I feel, you know, you can get someone of somewhat equal value at half the price.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, like, would you rather pay Willie Cauley-Stein $2.2 million or Dwight Powell $10.2 million?
Right, and that's Willie Cauley-Stein to me. And again, that's not a knock on Powell. That's just like the market, right? So, realizing this as well, like, you would have to give up some type of asset to get out of Powell, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, because he'll be in 2021. He'll still have 2 years left at $11 million each.
Yeah, and he'll be 30, right?
Yeah, somewhere around there. That sounds right.
Yeah, he's older than one might think because he's been in the league for a while. People have a tendency to forget that he's going to be 29 this July.
Yeah, right. He'll turn 30 in July of 2021.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think that's what, not only this offseason, but next offseason too. Like, Luka is heading into year 3, so next summer he becomes eligible for an extension. They will max him immediately. So, right. You know, come 2022, a lot of that opportunity to add a third star dries up, at least via free agency. So, you know, next summer's free agent class, again, projected to be super loaded. I think probably this summer and the trade deadline, or this offseason, I should say, and the trade deadline will be angling to set themselves up to make a big splash in 2021.
I mean, that would be interesting. And here's the thing. They already have the role players, too.
Yeah.
Like, you have Seth Curry. You have Dorian Finney-Smith, who's becoming more and more like Trevor Ariza every single year,
mm-hmm.
and who is really a vastly underrated player. I already brought up Kleba.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have the complementary pieces. So you would have the 3 stars, you would have a good set of complementary pieces, and then you would actually have a little bit more money to spend. And hey, maybe you even can afford to keep DeLon Wright on the books.
Yeah.
That is not bad. Like, I really like where the Mavs are from a financial perspective.
Yeah, they are positioned very well to add a third star sometime in the next 2 years. And if and when they do, they're going to be very scary.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into the New Orleans Pelicans, because they actually, unlike Memphis and Dallas, where it's, you know, you're kind of looking ahead future years, New Orleans has a lot of decisions to make this summer. Let's start with Brandon Ingram. He is a restricted free agent. He is the best restricted free agent on the market because a lot of the guys, you know, Ben Simmons, Pascal Siakam, Jaylen Brown, a lot of guys signed extensions this past fall. If you're the Pelicans, do you give Ingram the 5-year max before, or like right when the restricted free agency starts? Say, like, don't even entertain other offers. Here you go.
Let me ask you this. Is Brandon Ingram better than Tobias Harris?
Yeah, I would say yes at this point. If he isn't, at least he's young enough where, like, I am confident that he will be soon. But I think he is currently, yes.
All right. I was looking more for a hell yes he is kind of response. The fact that you showed your homework colors a little bit right there. I would say hell yes he is.
Yeah.
And you know what my follow-up question is?
Well, but you can't base one team's dumb decision. Like, he'll ask for it because of that. But should the Pelicans, like, that's just saying, should the Pelicans give money because another team overpaid someone?
Like, isn't that what free agency is all about, Brian?
Yeah, but, like, you can't make decisions. You have to make decisions independent of other teams' dumb decisions.
Well, okay, go ahead with that, and then maybe you lose Brandon Ingram. Then what?
Well, that is the problem. I think he's going to get max this summer.
Of course he is.
Atlanta would come and max him pretty
on day
quickly.
One. Yeah. Yeah, no, of course. Look, here's the thing. You know, you and I talk about, you know, the max deals and who's really worthy of it and all of that. We've spent years talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, for me, this boils down to two things. One, is Brandon Ingram going to get a max just based off of market? Yes, absolutely he is. That's just, like, that's a non-issue. He is.
Yeah.
Is he one of those players who's actually going to deserve it? And here's the thing. For once, I'm actually going to say I think so.
Yeah.
Unlike a Tobias Harris, where, you know, again, he was always going to get it, but when you look at his production, you kind of go, well, maybe he really shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
With Brandon Ingram, this is a 22-year-old who just dropped 24 points a game, 6.5 boards, 4.5 assists, hit 137 triples in 56 games, you know, drastic improvement on that front, and increased his free throw percentage by almost 20 percentage points
mm-hmm.
on higher volume.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that the guy is legit at this point. You could argue, well, the 56 games is a smaller sample size than the rest of his Lakers career. Yes, that is true. But I would also argue that him in LA was never, never an optimal situation for him.
Mm-hmm.
He was never used accurately. He was never given the freedom that he's been given in New Orleans.
Yeah.
He was never unshackled like the way that he has been right now. And he constantly played, you know, in this Lakers media market, which can be just such a murdering concept for especially young players. I believe in Brandon Ingram.
Yeah. And I think the only question, like, he got off to such a great start, made his first All-Star game. All of that was wonderful. The only lingering question about him, about, like, is he an absolute no-brainer max for the Pelicans, was, okay, what happens when Zion comes back? Because, yeah, sure, he's putting up huge numbers, you know, with when he's the unquestioned number one guy, but what happens when Zion comes back? His numbers did dip somewhat, but not drastically. I mean, like, he still had pretty good games, even with Zion in the lineup. And, yeah, sure, right. Zion was on a minutes restriction, so, like, maybe Brandon Ingram doesn't average 24 a game next year. But that's okay. Right. Like, you're paying for the player, not necessarily the per-game stats, right? So, like, he's good. He's very good, and I agree. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm giving the max. I'm not even... Because then you get into, okay, well, maybe he's going to want a shorter deal so he can hit the market again in a couple years, and the cap will go up, and he can, you know, get 30% instead of 25%. You just don't want to mess with that. Just give him, like, lock him in. You can't afford, especially... You know, you've got plenty of runway with Zion. This is only a first year, you know, whatever. you can't afford messing around and like running a situation like what Utah did with Gordon Hayward, where, you know, Hayward said, okay, well, since I'm not getting what I wanted, I'm going to take a 3+1 instead of the full length deal.
Right.
So, yeah.
And yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, like, yeah, no brainer max for me.
All right. Good to hear. We agree. I will add this because you said he dropped off. He did, but honestly, the last five games of the season, that's where it was really bad. That was March. Mm. He played five games in March, and he averaged 18 points. Before that, he was above 24 points in every single month, so I'm not nervous about that. I'm going to say something that's going to make me very, very unpopular on Pelicans Twitter right now.
Oh, boy.
And no, but I want to preface this as well, because this is not a prediction on you know, my end, and it's not, you know, something that I hope for, like, quite the opposite, honestly. We also have to talk about the elephant in the room. And, you know, the elephant in the room is that Zion Williamson is at the same weight as an elephant. and that is going to be murder on those knees.
Sure.
Again, knock on wood that this doesn't happen. But if his knees buckle, it would be pretty damn nice to have a Brandon Ingram ready to basically take over those minutes moving forward if your, you know, organizational player will be down the road maybe a what-if case, you know? Mm-hmm. And again, I want to reiterate, this is not something I am hoping for. Quite the opposite. I hope for a long, healthy, lengthy career for Zion Williamson, and I hope that he dominates the entire league because he is fun and he seems like a legitimate good kid, and that is awesome. I am just saying, for an organization, you also need to protect yourself, and you know that risk is there. And you could argue, well, that risk is there with everyone. Yes, but this is still a unique kind of circumstances. You've never seen this 6'6 kid who weighs, you know, almost 290 pounds and who leaps the way that he does. You just don't know. We're in uncharted territories here.
Yeah.
So part of this for, you know, Brandon Ingram's max contract would be insurance.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a very fair point. I guess another question that I have for the Pelicans is, you know, they got off to the rough start in part because Zion was out, but also because Derek Favors missed a lot of time early in the season. And when he came back, he really solidified that defense. Now, he is a unrestricted free agent this summer. Do you bring him back? And how much?
If you can, yeah, sure. I mean, look, what's the alternative here? Zion is probably a four, right? I mean, I don't think it's in his best interest that you kind of throw him at the center immediately, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the alternative is Jackson Hayes or Jahlil Okafor. And, you know, Hayes isn't ready for, you know, being a full-time starter. He's not going to have the same impact defensively as Derek Favors. And we all know Ja. Like, he's, Jahlil is good, but he's a bench guy. Like, he's a bench scorer at the big position.
Mm-hmm.
Having a defensive anchor in that sense from Favors, who isn't a shot-hungry player, which is a very important thing to note here. He's not going to take shots away from Brandon Ingram or Zion or Drew Holiday or anyone. Like, he's an opportunistic scorer, and that's about it. He'll get you garbage buckets and, like, you know, hard hat and lunch pail type of buckets. And he's a rebounder, defender. You could always use those guys.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what he'll get financially, oh boy. I don't know. Like, we saw how the market just shifted for centers last year. I have no idea where it is right now. Like, what would you give him? I'm thinking, like, personally, because I think he's so influential defensively, I would probably give him somewhere around $15 million. But I may be completely overstating the market. Maybe he's, like, from a market perspective, he's worth less than that. I don't know. I don't know where we're at with centers these days. Do we still like centers? I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say. And, you know, he's still somewhat young. Like, it's, I mean, what is he? He's
28.
20. Yeah. So he turns 29 in the middle of July.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would think you should want to retain him if you're New Orleans, just because of the impact he made on your defense and because you can spare Zion. Like, I don't think Zion is ready to be a full-time five. I mean, Jackson Hayes, as you said, showed promise, but like I think he's still, you know, probably not ready to be the full-time five yet either. So right. I think it behooves you to bring him back. What is that price point that makes sense for both sides? That's where it gets tricky. I think probably like a one-year $10 to $12 million deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, if they get him for that, I would consider that a steal. But then again, I don't know how the market shakes out.
Yeah.
We brought this up so many times before. We also don't know like what teams are out there with cap space who'd be willing to spend on certain players.
Right.
Maybe the market is just completely out on Derek Favors because not many teams have cap space, and the few that do are, you know, kind of rebuilding and want someone younger.
Mm-hmm.
You may be able to get him for much cheaper. And then it becomes like an ethical thing, right? Then it becomes this thing of, should we just lowball the living hell out of Derek Favors and potentially risk him getting upset? And then that would ricochet around the league and we'll get a bad rep.
Right.
Like, that angle has to be considered as well. So I think you need to sit down with Favors and you need to figure out something that's fair for both sides, even if you ultimately end up paying him a little bit more than what the market dictates.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other big question for the Pelicans is that Lonzo Ball becomes eligible for an extension this summer. If you're the Pelicans, do you extend Lonzo, and for how much?
No, I wait. I think Lonzo has restricted free agency written all over him.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think he was significantly better this year. I mean, just look at his stats. They're so much better. And that's not even taking into account how he looks and how he looked playing. Like, he mm-hmm. looks far more comfortable on an NBA court than ever before. It's amazing what happens when you get out of the shadow of LA, huh? When you really think about it.
Yeah.
Like, Josh Hart also looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not there where, you know, I've seen enough to believe that he is, you know, some clear-cut future guy. Because unlike Brandon Ingram, who you know, had this insanely high production level day in and day out, yeah, there were certain certainties with Lonzo in terms of when he came on the court. You expected a good court vision. You expected the defense. You expected the rebounding. The offense was still in and out. Like, he was more consistent, yes. Like, he would definitely took a step up. But he isn't consistent, if you catch my drift. Like, he's not, like, one of those, you know a completely reliable scorer or offensive player yet.
Right.
And you also just have to figure out, what is his role moving forward? Like, mm-hmm. is he a two? Is he a one? Do you move Drew to the two? What is the actual way that you do it? Like, those two shared the backcourt this year, but do you make Lonzo, like, a more feature player because he matches up age-wise with Zion? I think there are just so many subplots that you need to figure out first, so I would let restricted free agency dictate his future. And if someone offers a max and he kind of plays the same way that he did right now next year, I would probably bite the bullet, even though I wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
And let him go.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. I mean, I don't think, unless it's a really team-friendly extension, right? I mean, if right. he's willing to settle for, who knows, like less than $20 million a year, then yeah, by all means, get him. But I don't think he will be. I think the fact that he had his best season yet will probably, you know, he'll come out and say, well, okay, if you're not going to assign me to what I think I deserve, I'm going to have another prove-it season next year, and then hopefully get closer to a max in 2021. So,
right.
Yeah, I think it's hard to envision both sides reaching an agreement this summer that makes sense.
I actually have a question for you here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I've been thinking about a little bit. Because obviously right now there's a deadline for when you can you extend players off the rookie deals.
Right.
What is it, October 30th? Or
it's the day before the start of the regular season.
That's right. So it got moved down last year. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Is that something that is actually hurting the league? Because because you don't have the ability in the middle of the year, in the middle of a player's fourth year,
mm-hmm.
to basically say, oh, okay, we know what you are now. We know what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's extend you. do you think it would behoove the league, and do you think it would be an improvement upon team decisions to allow extension, rookie extensions, to take place in the middle of the season all the way up to the trade deadline, where you then have an official deadline for that as well?
It's a good question. I mean, I guess what would the advantage be other than...
Well, more data.
Yeah, but like...
Less bad contracts? I mean, that's the theory.
Because I think the league loves free agency, right? Like, it's such a big money maker for them, at least in terms of interest. So I don't think the league really cares all that much, probably, about...
That's a fair point.
Yeah, like, I think they are probably more focused on, okay, let's get teams and players involved in free agency, and like, let's have fun with this thing. So
you're telling me that the league is in love with, here's the 50 most overrated or overpaid players in the league lists.
They probably don't like those slideshows. Look, especially this year, it's probably going to be screwy because you're going to have to push everything back, first of all. I mean, who knows when these deadlines are going to be, but yeah, it's a fair question. Like, would it, I mean, hell, why not, you know, for most team or most players, you can extend them right up until their contract is up. Like, why not do that? Yeah. I don't have a good answer.
I think it would be interesting, and I think you would just save teams from themselves. And isn't that the whole mantra of ownership?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the more data you have on a guy, and like, if a guy breaks out in the middle of the fourth year, you're not, you know, looking at that situation and going, oh man, we could have, it should have.
Right.
Like when Jimmy Butler, you know, rejected that four-year, $50 million deal extension, the Bulls offered him, like, I'm going to bet on myself, you know, and they ended up paying the full max. And that was good for Jimmy, and that was well worth it. So that's a situation where I can see it definitely benefits the player. But even I still think having to go through restricted free agency is also kind of a drag for players and teams, in the sense that, you know, the player will always have that feeling afterwards, like, oh, you didn't believe in me. I had to go out there, and I had to, you know, of course I would develop. Like, I'm a young player. I'm in year four of my NBA career. Of course I would get better.
Right.
And you didn't buy stock in me in the same extent that I thought.
Yeah.
I think that is lurking. Like, we heard the rumblings that Kawhi Leonard did not appreciate being a restricted free agent, for example. I just think there's something to gain in at least looking into it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a fair point. All right, Moit, let's move on to the Houston Rockets.
Yes.
Who were, honestly, like, if the season can't come back this year, one of my biggest regrets will be not being able to see whether this small ball thing worked, because after the trade deadline, no team interested me more than the Houston Rockets. So that's really the first question is, and I guess these kind of dovetail into one another, is A, do you buy into this small ball thing actually giving them a higher chance at a championship? And if not, what does that mean for Daryl Morey, who, you know, given the controversy in the preseason, there was some speculation at the time that he was about to be fired. And then Mike D'Antoni, who there was a contract dispute, like he ended up, I believe he was a lame duck coach this year because Tillman would not extend him. What happens with those two guys this offseason?
I have no idea. That's a very, very short answer, because here's the thing. We didn't get a chance to really see the small ball lineup a whole lot. We saw it a couple of weeks, and that was kind of it, right? So the sample size is just so small. We didn't see it in anything that resembled playoff context.
Right.
So that is just an impossible question to get. I have no idea. One thing is, it looked entertaining.
Yeah.
That I can respond to. Like, that, it looked a hell of a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it would have translated into the playoffs where, you know, everything slows down and, like, maybe they get meshed up against, you know, a team with significant height. I have no idea if they get absolutely brutally murdered. I have no idea.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't think they know either. I think that's, I would suspect that your regret pales in comparison to the regret of Daryl Morey not knowing this. I think he is so upset. I think he is itching to see how this works out.
Yeah.
So if this turns out to be his last year in Houston, and Mike's as well, because I think those two really go hand in hand, that would be such a shame.
Yeah.
Because then you finally have your vision, and then you don't even see it through because you're maybe out of a job.
Yeah.
For Morey, I don't hope that's the case. I just hope someone else comes in out of left field and says, hey, I want to buy the Rockets because I'm competent.
Right, right.
And the league goes, yes, please. Thank you. Thank you. That would be nice.
Yeah.
But no, I have no idea how it worked. I mean, we just didn't see it enough to make like an educated guess on it, I think.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's unfortunate. I would have loved to see what would have happened, but yeah, I'm totally with you in thinking. I mean, again, I think we said this right when they made these moves that neither one of us really bought their chances before the trades.
Right.
I don't think either one of us really bought them after either, but we at least said like, oh, well, they have a better chance.
Right. And no, I agree.
Yeah, that's, I feel exactly as I did before, where I still don't think they would have won the title this year, but I think they would have had a much better chance than they would have otherwise.
It's the whole 5% thing again, right? Like, yeah. If you're above the 5% chance of winning a championship, which is obviously very subjective of whether or not you're there, but Morey certainly felt as though we have a 5% chance, and when you have that, you just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
I respect that. I respect what he did. I respect what he tried. I agree with you. I think I'm leaning towards saying I don't think it would have worked, but I have nothing to keep that statement in. Like, I have nothing to like solidify it with. That's just pure speculation on my behalf, and maybe it's because I'm old and gray and skeptical of what the hell, a league without big men. What is this? What is this sorcery? But you, I mean, look, you hit the nail on the head there. It's at least very, very interesting. And I love the fact that we're, you know, following a league that is so innovative.
Yeah.
And I mean, good on Daryl and good on the Houston Rockets to actually do it. And I really hope that we get to see this project over a full season. Absolutely, I would love that. But if that doesn't materialize, then I hope that Morey and D'Antoni go hand in hand to another team where they're being told, hey, you know what, do what you did, just with a different roster. I know we don't have James Harden, but like, figure it out somehow.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, there's no real reason to abort on it now. Like, maybe it just totally flames out in the playoffs, and then you have that answer, and you say, okay, great, we're moving on. But you're kind of locked into this roster right now. Like, Westbrook, Harden, Gordon, Covington, Tucker, Daniel House are all under contract for next year. All of those guys, except for Tucker, are under contract through 2021, 2022 as well. So you don't have a ton of flexibility in terms of like totally remaking this roster, unless you're willing to trade James Harden, which I don't know if we're at that point yet, but then this also dovetails into Tillman Fertitta, and especially, you know, how this ongoing crisis is affecting him financially. Like, he had to furlough tens of thousands of workers at all of his casinos. I mean, that casino industry is getting crippled by this, which, and Tillman, it was pretty clear, was averse to spending a ton of money on this team. Like, you know, coincidentally, quote unquote, they slipped under the tax like every year. Like, oh, what a surprise, we somehow got under the tax before the trade deadline. You know, right now they have 6 players under guaranteed contract. They will probably pick up Ben McLemore, has $2.3 million not guaranteed, so they'll probably pick that up. They also have Isaiah Hartenstein under contract at $1.6 million. So that's six, seven, eight players. They, with a $115 million cap, they're only 11.6 from the tax. Like, they would basically just have to round out their roster with minimum guys from this point forward. So, is Tillman willing to spend the tax? I think, honestly, one of the biggest questions for the Houston Rockets this summer. Because if not, then I don't know where you turn.
No, I don't think he is. And I wanted to clarify, I don't think that Harden is ever going to get traded as long as Daryl Morey is in town. Yeah. I think Morey has hitched his wagon to James, and I think that's clever because he knows that James is you know, an all-time great player.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, that caliber of player doesn't come along often.
Sure.
So it's more along the lines, if Morey is fired and Mike D'Antoni is fired, that's when you raise that question. Do we trade Harden and then pivot into something else? Even though that would also be like franchise suicide. Can you imagine Rockets fans if that happens?
No.
You know, that would be, I don't wish that upon them at all. That would be horrible.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, this is the roster that they're locked into. Obviously, you can always trade certain guys, but like, to what end? You know what I mean? If this is what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Like, can you trade Eric Gordon for something good? Probably not, right? I mean, does he have that trade value? I don't think so. PJ Tucker is 75 years old. That's not going to fetch a whole lot.
Right.
Like, this is probably the roster that, like you said, that they've just locked themselves into. And I'm only taking great joy in imagining, you know, Fertitta looking at this cap sheet and crying.
I know, he definitely is. There's no way he's like, oh, what did I get myself into? He's going to have to sell part of the team, ultimately.
Yeah. What was it I saw here the other day? I think it was Forbes who put up a video that Jordan in Charlotte sold 20% of the Hornets, and it was some major, I don't even remember the number, it was a major haul. Like, it got a lot of money from it. Maybe that's just the way to do it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, because he's otherwise dead broke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. What a guy. Yeah, but I mean, really, because if regardless of what happens with Morey and D'Antoni, if you don't believe that the small ball thing is going to work, you need to find the center. But how do you do that with a min deal? I mean, again, it boils down to, Maybe you can. Maybe a guy like Cauley Stein or like, you know, a Nerlens Noel or something is out there. But if not, uh-oh. You know?
Yeah. Like,
I just don't know how you get out of this current situation.
Yeah, you don't, I think. This is, most of it, I think, is for the long haul. I just cannot imagine a scenario wherein you, like, the only way out is basically blowing it up, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh boy, that's not great.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, then for Houston, let's hope it works. That they, you know, they go far.
Mm-hmm.
Would you deem this a success if they don't win the championship, but like they make it to, like, let's say, consecutive conference finals?
The small ball thing, or just in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Small ball. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Especially given the caliber of competition that they would have to overcome.
Exactly right. Yeah,
I mean, they would have to get through at least one of the LA teams, so definitely.
And you would have to get through Denver, who would be a year older and then 2 years older or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Utah would get better.
Yeah,
like OKC, you know, could really look good in 2 years because of all the young players and draft picks that they have. Luka is only going to get so much better in Dallas. The same with Ja Morant in Memphis. And New Orleans is right there knocking on the door. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would consider that a huge win as well if they do that.
The Rockets window is definitely closer to closed than open. I mean, if it doesn't happen, you know, if this season resumes this season or next, that's probably all she wrote. But,
right.
Like, I do hope that the Harden era in Dallas or in Houston is, I hope it's not viewed as a failure just because they couldn't beat an all-time great dynasty. I mean,
right.
You know, they had them on the ropes two straight years. Like, they played really, they were a really great team. They just ran into you know, they are similar to the mid-90s Utah Jazz, where it was a great team that just happened to run into one of the best teams of all time.
I mean, I know that people are pointing at James Harden and basically saying, well, you know, good stats, but what else?
Yeah.
Let's just put it right there on the table. At no point can you look at James Harden's tenure in Houston and at any point say that's a failure.
No, you really should not.
He's been outstanding, and I understand that the way he plays annoys people. I don't care. Yeah. Look at what he produces on a night-to-night basis. The minutes load, the right. shot load, the usage rate, the passing, the scoring. No. If anything, this is going to be one of those eras that Houston fans are going to hang their hats on and say that was greatly enjoyable. Yeah. It may not have been Hakeem and the championships, but James Harden's Houston Rockets era is second in line, and that's not bad.
Right, for sure. I hope so. I mean, that's how it should be, at least. But
right,
I guess we'll see how history remembers him.
Yeah. Well, that's where we're. That's why we're here.
That's right. All right, let's finish up with the San Antonio Spurs.
Do we have to?
We do. I mean, they're one of the more interesting teams this summer, which is the first time you could ever say that about the Spurs in the offseason.
And it certainly is something you can say, and I can sit there and just nod along. Okay.
Well,
fine. Sell me on that, Brian.
Okay.
Please, I mean, sell me on that.
Right now, if the playoffs were to start today,
right,
the Spurs would not make it.
Right.
That is the first time I can say that in more than two decades.
Correct.
Greg Popovich, we don't know how much longer he's going to be coaching, but he has given no indication that he's going to retire after this season, at least.
Right.
DeMar DeRozan is the first domino to fall. He has a $27.7 million player option. What do you think he does with that? Does he pick it up, or does he decline it and become a free agent?
Because of the whole situation right now and because of his age, I think he picks it up. What I fear is going to happen is that he'll get extended for more years.
Mm.
Oh, I don't think that should happen.
No.
But no, I think he picks it up. And this is partly why I don't think there's a whole lot to talk about the Spurs. Because this is not their fault. I mean, we're looking at a global pandemic. I think most of this roster is going to be returning next year.
Yeah. It's possible. There is, you know, like 2 days before the NBA shut down, there was a Chris Haynes report saying that if DeMar was going to opt out if he did not sign an extension before free agency. Now, I don't know how this changes, how the past month changes his plans, or if it does right. at all. You know, Jabari Young of CNBC, who is pretty plugged into DeRozan's camp, was also reporting, like, look, DeRozan isn't happy in San Antonio, and it's pretty obvious. So what does he value more, his happiness, or does he value that $27.7 million? And we'll find out in a couple months. I would agree with you. Financially, it makes all the sense in the world to opt in because of all the factors that we talked about earlier with Tim Hardaway. There aren't many teams with cap space, especially good teams. Like, if you opt out, you're either going to be signing with a terrible team who you single-handedly will not elevate, so you're going to be condemning right. yourself to being on a lottery team for the rest of your prime, or you're going to have to settle for the mid-level exception. You're going to take almost a $20 million pay cut. Like, it doesn't make sense either way. But regardless of what DeRozan does, the Spurs also have LaMarcus Aldridge, Rudy Gay, Patty Mills, all of whom will be on expiring contracts for the 2020-2021 season. They'll all be right. unrestricted free agents in 2021. So, Mort, I mean, we've asked this question about the Spurs time and again, and they have proven us wrong time and again, but is this finally time for the San Antonio Spurs to embark upon a rebuild?
Yes. You asked me that question like 16 times over the past 12 months. I'm going to give you the same reply as I've done all the time. Yes, it is time. And I know that I'll have some Spurs fans in my mentions about it, and that's fine. Go ahead, Jesse. I know you're there. I'm kidding. I love to hear from Jesse. Jesse's a good one.
Yeah.
Look, it's. I just think it's time now. You. I think they tried their damnedest to stay competitive. And I will tell you this, and I think it's very, very important. This doesn't get lost in context. I respect the living hell out of the Spurs for being this stubborn on being competitive, because that is the point of basketball. Mm-hmm. I do think that that is honorable to some extent. I really do. But at the same time, I also look at it and going, why are you prolonging this? Like, DeMar DeRozan, I understand what he gives you in terms of passing. I know what he gives you in terms of rebounding. I know what he gives you in terms of the running game. But, and it's not just the shooting. It's not. It's the amount of possessions that he dominates that I think should go to a younger generation of players. You know, you can't tell me that Lonnie Walker, Deontay Murray, you know, Keldon Johnson, Derek White wouldn't have necessarily grown even more by taking over some of those possessions. Mm-hmm. I think they would. I think that is just a natural part of how the NBA is. The Spurs prioritized DeRozan, which is their right. Of course, if they wanted to go that route, fine. I just happen to think it's the wrong one. I think it's about time you pivot in the other direction. This is where we're at. I think Aldridge, like, how do you trade someone who's earning $24 million in this market and given the coronavirus and everything? I think he's there until 2021. And for me, I'm just kind of waiting for 2021 to roll around for the Spurs. That's when I think it's going to be extremely exciting.
Because they could be a big free agent landing spot? Or, like, are you talking about the 2021 trade deadline where they could have...
No, 2021 summer. So not because they're necessarily a free agency player, but here's the thing with cap space. You don't have to use it in free agency.
That's
you
true.
Can get creative. And also, you don't have to use it on big name guys. Like, for example, this year in 2020, I think it would be so smart to go out if you're a team that's somewhat young, but, you know, not necessarily in the 18-19 age group, but like in you know, the early mid 20s, to go out and get like a Derek Jones Jr. Like, some of those guys who are still young enough to become more, mm-hmm. but you can pay them sort of market value for what they are right now. And then in a couple of years, that signing is going to look fantastic potentially. And I think for the Spurs, they should lean into that because they are good talent evaluators. They are. They always have been. Lately, they've just been relying on veterans too much. Yeah. I think for them to have so much cap space and they can go out and they can identify young players under the radar and build them and sign them and then build that and add them to the roster with Lonnie Walker, Murray, Kelt Johnson, White, Trey Lyles, potentially, if they keep him around, and Jakob Poeltl, and like those guys. Hell, Bryn Forbes as well. I like Bryn Forbes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could be interesting. Then you have this young nucleus, and then you kind of figure out who's the best of the bunch, and then you stick with those, and then you trade the rest and like puzzle things around until you find a successful formula. That's what's intriguing to me. This treading water kind of thing that they're going on right now, I don't see the point. What are they going to accomplish? Like, they were going to compete for a title this year. Like, that's ludicrous. Like, that's not... But again, I still respect it because they're playing to win, and you can never not respect that.
Yeah, I mean, if the season does resume at some point and they do not make the playoffs, like, I think part of this stubbornness was maintaining that streak. And now if that streak is over, you don't have to be stubborn about blowing up the team, because now it's not like, oh, well, we need to make the playoffs for the 24th straight year. It's like, well, okay, you missed it last year. It's over. Now we can go about rebuilding. So I think the fact that they do have so many expiring contracts puts them in a good spot, because I think, you know, I wrote about this for Forbes the other day, teams that are looking to dump multi-year bad contracts like Kevin Love, Blake Griffin, Al Horford, it was already going to be hard to do so just because so many teams are saving up for 2021 and that big free agent class.
Right.
Now that we just can't accurately project the salary caps moving forward. Like, we have no idea. You know, the NBA projects out multiple years in advance and gives these estimates to teams, and that's what they are basing their whole strategy around. Like, they said, The cap for 2021-2022 was supposed to be $125 million. So teams could go ahead and start their team building, say, okay, let's work backwards here. We need to have X amount of space to be able to sign Giannis in 2021. So we you know we have to have this much space coming off the books by then so we right. can at least be a player for him. Now we don't know what the cap's going to be. Like, hopefully the NBA issues guidance between now and the start of free agency this offseason saying, here's how we plan on going about setting the cap each year moving forward in the midst of this pandemic until everything goes back to normal. And maybe teams can use that and start to build their plans again. But right now there's just so much uncertainty that I think it's going to be really, really hard to have teams sign off on taking multi-year salary dumps.
Yeah.
The Spurs are in the advantageous position where they have big contracts that they could use because they're expiring. So they, you know, if they decide we're not going to be free agent players, okay, well, maybe the Spurs take Blake Griffin if the Pistons are willing to give them, you know, more assets back in return. Like, flip Blake Griffin for LaMarcus Aldridge. That's something that at least intrigues me in the chance that, like, you know, if they do decide, okay, we're going to go into rebuild mode, you know, we talk about this all the time with rebuilding teams. Like, this is a great way to use your cap space is just take on bigger contracts. If you're not going to be a free agent player, take on bigger, longer contracts. Like, if you don't give a damn about the 2021 free agent class, great. Spend your cap space on Blake Griffin instead, as long as you get a future first round pick attached.
Yeah, no, I would be down for that. I think you and I have actually talked about this before, about using, not necessarily 2021, but basically for the Spurs to pivot into being a team that goes into this asset acquisition mindset in a period where they actually transition from being a playoff team to rebuilding. And I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head. That's a smart way of doing business. The question for me is that organization ready for that? I don't know, like, how the people inside of that organization thinks.
Yeah.
Maybe they are hell-bent on not doing that. Again, that I'm not speculating or I'm not saying, not reporting anything, but you have to wonder how many new voices are there. I mean, they did move RC up, so he's like, he has this grander view of things right now. So maybe he's able to basically just say, yeah, it's time. It's just time to pivot.
Yeah.
I guess the future will tell us.
The other big question I have for the Spurs is what to do about Derek White, who is also eligible for an extension this summer. Do you think they reach a deal with him?
Much like Lonzo Ball, I think he's got restricted free agent written all over him.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think there's too much uncertainty on both from the financial side and from, I mean, White and DeJounte Murray didn't play together all that much this season. And I think that's one of the big questions moving forward is, are these two guys compatible? We need more data to figure that out.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Mort. Well, that is a good place to wrap up.
Hang on. Look, I cannot finish up this episode before we actually talk about something.
Okay.
So recently, Draymond Green has been throwing a lot of shade towards Charles Barkley, which, okay. One thing is, you know, to not like Barkley's opinions. That, I think, objectively is fair because Barkley has horrific opinions. And I know you can't comment because you're a company man. That's fine. Mm-hmm. One thing you can comment on, though, is that when it reaches a point where you try to diminish Charles Barkley, the player, then it becomes dumb.
Yep.
And I would just like to remind people that regardless of all the stupid things that Charles says during, you know, inside the NBA, this dude was an otherworldly player back in his heyday. We're talking about a guy who is somewhere between 6'4 and 6'6, playing the power forward position and grabbing almost 15 rebounds a game over a season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always being in a top tier rebounding department, always being one of the primary scorers, being a secondary playmaker on the team, really good underrated passer, got into the passing lanes, You know, he wasn't necessarily a good defender, but he would get you blocks, he would challenge shots. Got to the free throw line a ton, was highly efficient from the field, took his team to the NBA Finals, where, granted, he lost to Jordan in Jordan's prime, so I don't even think that's a big knock on him, to be honest with you.
Right.
And it just, it blows my mind to see people, you know, on social media kind of agreeing with Draymond Green that Charles wasn't special.
Mm-hmm.
As a player, like, yeah, he was overrated. Yeah, hey, you know what, Draymond Green, who averages like 6-6, you're right. That's, you know, you're so much better. Stop it. Stop this nonsense right now. If you fall into the camp of agreeing with Draymond Green about Chuck being an overrated player, you are doing things wrong, and you need to look in the mirror and reevaluate your existence immediately.
Yeah. Wow. Harsh. Or just go back and watch Charles Barkley on YouTube.
Right.
Either way.
Harsh but fair, Brian. You got to admit that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Chuck was good. Chuck was really, really good. And I have a problem, you know, when you try to basically downplay Chuck for a guy who, again, Draymond is great. I am not dishing on Draymond. Trust me.
Right,
that's
right.
When I said the 6-6 guy kind of thing, look, I realize what he gives you. He gives you great defense. He gives you great leadership. He gives you all those things. But don't tell me for a minute that Draymond Green can be the type of player who leads a team to the NBA Finals as the top two guy.
Yeah.
Great defender. Great playmaker. And that's about it. Stop it.
Well, that is a good place to wrap up.
Damn straight.
So, hope you're all doing well out there, staying safe. If you are in a state like me where that is opening up in the next week, I would just exercise caution is all I will say. We are nowhere near done this thing. And if you're going to go outside, at least please God wear a mask and don't drink bleach. Best medical advice we can give in this episode.
That is not great. Just, look, and let me reiterate, even if you believe what Draymond Green is saying, don't drink bleach.
Right.
Don't.
Right. With that said, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Also, please make sure to check out Morten's pod for the Danish listeners out there on The Last Dance. But, Mort, have a good one. Enjoy the next couple episodes, my friend.
Thank you very, very much. Spoiler alert, I've already seen the next few episodes.
Ooh.
There are perks. There are perks with this job.
No spoilers, but is it worth tuning in at least?
Dude, obviously.
All right, there you go. Well, everyone tune in Sunday night and we can watch more Last Dance together. But in the meantime, stay safe. Have a good one, man.
You too.